Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Pismo Beach and all the clams we can eat. No, it's just Titanic Tuesday on the horn. This is HeadOnRadioNetwork.com live on the 16th day of June 2015. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way early. Yes, indeed. Run by HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click on the tab chat room if you want to jump in and participate in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place every evening during these hours. Yes, indeed. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Wonderful. Glad to know it. Appreciate the information. I sincerely do. A little weather advisory, the same as last night. If we suddenly disappear, it's not because I got disgusted and stomped out, or I had a sudden case of, Trumpism or something like that. No. It is simply a matter of the weather. We're under a flash flood warning. Yeah, by God, they didn't even stop it. They didn't fool around with watch. They just went right to warning. But we're on relatively high ground. So that is, but now there's a bunch of thunderstorms and thunder and lightning and blowing winds. And yeah, because wind blows. I mean, no such thing as still wind, right? But it's possible that we could just beep. And, I mean, there's enough power on the uninterruptible power supplies. And thank you for the contribution of same on a couple of those. There's enough time to let me shut stuff down, but it'll be sort of a bye, y'all, if that's what happens. Because we do have, in fact, a fragile, underfunded, undercapitalized, undermaintained, antiquated coal-fired power grid that basically runs power lines on toothpicks stuck in the ground, through the forest, nothing buried because it's 6 inches and then pure rock. And, I mean, it may not happen. But, you know, just a general warning. Didn't realize that. This 16th day of June, according to Jeremy in Vermont, is Tupac's birthday. He too, Jeremy notes, was hated by many conservative bots and talking heads in his day, one of which was the Vice President of the United States. Well, how about that? Yes. So, remember him well. It is Titanic Tuesday. I hope I haven't called it anything else yet, because that's what it is, Titanic Tuesday. And I guess Java continues to create fits. I just got a note. Home, listening, trying to join chat. Subject line, gah, Java. Yeah. Especially with Apple devices. I'm not sure about Microsoft devices. I guess we'll be upgrading to Microsoft 10 sometime after July the 29th. July the 29th. That's what the notification on the in the corner of the computer screen said earlier today. Who knows what will happen after that. Oh, a little unpaid advertisement. I just ran across something up at the Wiggling Pig you might be interested in. It might be in other parts of the country. I prefer a home. Jeb Bush and I, and by the way, that is the official designation, courtesy of Carol Baker, for the younger Bush, now running for president of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now forever today. We are henceforward referring to him as Jebya. It works, doesn't it? I mean, it's really right next door to perfect. He's W, but he's Jeb. If you think it's butter, but it's not, it's chiffon. Jebya. Anyway, Jebya was going on and on in some old on-the-stump kind of thingy that he was doing about how he, Jebya, understands the immigrant experience. And cited as his basis for understanding the immigrant experience the fact that he has a secret recipe for guacamole. Guacamole, of course, coming from the Nahuatl language, meaning mixture made of avocados. Mole meaning basically mixture. It's not just something made with chilies and ground up chocolate. No. It's any mixture. And avocado is made into a mixture is mole. Right. And I prefer, as do many, I prefer my guacamole made fresh. But here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, fresh avocados are a thing devoutly to be wished for and seldom to be had. What you do is you buy these little green grenades over in the grocery store, and you hope you don't forget about them, because it's going to take about 3 days before they're fit to use. If you don't forget about them, you can go on and make your guacamole. If you're on the lazy side of life, however, and you're wandering through the deli case up to the Wiggling Pig, and you look over and you go, "Well, how about that?" Because it's kind of a moment in West Virginia when the Wiggling Pig in a rural area such as mine has prefabbed a guacamole in the case there. In this case, all natural, holy, wholly. Guacamole, America's number one in the spicy configuration, made with hand-scooped Haas avocados, there's no high fructose corn syrup or deoxyribonucleic separated number two field grade corn or anything in it, and it comes from fish. Pressurized foods of Saginaw, Texas, but then also says, because I guess they printed these before the House of Representatives voted, it has country of origin labeling, and America's number one guacamole is made in Mexico, which is okay. I mean, insofar as Jebya is a guacamole maker, and it qualifies him as understanding the immigrant experience, and my guacamole recipe qualifies me as the Uitlatoani of the one world, well, I guess it's okay that America's number one guacamole would come from Mexico. And I'm here to tell you, in an unpaid product placement and the food porn section of the program this evening, all natural, holy guacamole, America's number one, spicy, with a little red chili pepper in the corner that says hot, but of course it isn't, even remotely. Kind of maybe a little bit tingly, but nothing much beyond it. But it's good. It's very, very good. It's downright tasty. So I heartily endorse all natural, holy guacamole, America's number one, spicy, courtesy of Fresherized Foods of Saginaw, Texas, and a product of Mexico. And I'm sure the next printing run on the boxes of this will no longer contain the words product of Mexico, because given that this is in fact Titanic Tuesday, on which we celebrate, or at least observe, I don't know that celebrate is the right word, but at least observe the Titanic intellect of the right wing, and the name for Titanic Tuesday, of course, comes from an account given by our buddy Jim, who is not so far away from here, over in the greater Beckley Metroplex area, of the morning that he turned on the 962nd level tier right wing blather boob on WWNR AM 620 Beckley to hear one of the mouth walking, knuckle breathing followers call the morning monotone and ask, "Steve, how come it is that there is like impressions of seashells inside the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic bunt pan. But that's where, and so that Titanic wisdom, and not just Titanic, bass-ackward wisdom, but Titanic bass-ackward wisdom offered with a real sense of certainty, that's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. And in point of fact, after the next, after the next run of boxes for Holy Guacamole, get it, Holy Guacamole, Batman, that kind of, only with a W. That whole product of Mexico thing will probably, maybe it'll disappear. It was, maybe 7 or 8 days ago when the House of Representing, because freedom, moved to eliminate something that we didn't really, none of us, realize was an actual problem here in America, the greatest country in the world on earth now forever today, to wit, having labels on our food telling us where the food came from. I mean, it's not like it was particularly detailed. It didn't say, comes from a sweatshop in China, and what you think is actually beef is really rat. No! Sorry. I think Scott and Linda are traveling in Europe right now, so I don't have to worry about ruining their dinner, and it's a little too early for dinner on the West Coast out in Vancouver, so I think I'm safe right now. But because of and this is kind of important, because of one of those innocuous trade agreements that we signed back in the Clinton 90s, remember the Clinton 90s? All that booming economy and that pointed knuckle being shaken at us saying, the North American Free Trade Agreement will be great for America. It will bring wonderful jobs to America. It'll be great for the American worker. All the while the organized labor groups were saying, it will. All our jobs are going to go to Guatemala, Bill. No, it's going to be great for America. And again, with the knuckle shaking. When you get chastised by the Clinton knuckle, is that knuckle-tizing? I don't know. But anyway, Bill Clinton and a bunch of Republicans and a bunch of well-connected, icky Democrats I screwed up. I said the T word. I will not say the T word anymore. The T word, begins with T and ends in rump, is banned. Talking about that human, that ain't a human. Talking about that critter, or at least the critter on his head that runs the rest of him, sort of like the thing I did with the Thunderdome, is banned. He is banned from the horn. Because, I'm sorry, he doesn't get to drive the clown train. He just doesn't. We're past a car, and we're past a bus, and now we're in some sort of express special for Republican presidential candidates. But anyway, so you remember the trade agreements. And, of course, the trade agreements had stuff in them that we didn't really know was there. But Canada and Mexico, our friends, our neighbors to the north and south, threatened to sue us. And by us, I mean we, the people of the United States, struggling to form that more perfect union, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, general welfare, that constitutional preamble stuff that Fat Tony Scalia says doesn't mean anything. Well, yeah, Canada and Mexico threatened to sue the new United States of America over country of origin labeling on beef, pork, and poultry. And so we did what all those free trade agreements provide for. There are mechanisms in there. And we went to the World Trade Organization. And we appealed. And the World Trade Organization told the United States to go F itself. They told us to go chini ourselves. Imagine that. Because we had this law that said that American citizens and people living here in America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, forever, today, have no right to know where the food we eat comes from. Now, this was on the front end of last week's, this happened before last week's vote on the TPP, which has more of the same in it. And I don't know about you. I mean, this is not right-wing radio, so I'm not going to tell anybody what to think or suggest how anybody should think. I'll just tell you what I think. And I like being able to pick up the package and read where my food came from. And you know what? There are some instances where I am more trusting of food from overseas suppliers than I am from suppliers right here in America. Because right here in America, government bad, regulation bad, kill jobs. We've given up on the notion that maybe it would be handy to have things like food inspectors. And so you wind up with the secret video recordings of dead and dying cattle being picked up with a forklift and taken over to the giant vat of Dinty Moore beef stew. Dead cows waiting. And of course, the answer to the surreptitious videos of the dead, dying, miserable cattle being picked because they can't stand up anymore, being picked up with forklifts and taken over to the waiting area for the big vat of Dinty Moore beef stew or Hormel chili or whatever. The remedy to that is to, of course, pass laws that make it near impossible to get those surreptitious videos anymore, because Merkins don't need to know what's going. Soylent Green is people, my friend. Right. So there are occasions in which you might look at a label and say, product of Australia, or product of France, and think, hey, oh, sorry, this from the chat room, Lottie with one of those, Lottie can just kind of work the shank in it before you even know you've been cut. Dinty Moore, now with 20% more healthy cattle. Yeah. Demi Moore, 20% less pathetic. On sale now. But in places, for instance, that don't allow recombinant bovine growth hormone or the disgusting GMO, you know, potatoes that have a gene from a wombat's toenail spliced into it or anything like that. You know, because science. Science! I might be more prone to buy those products, maybe even pay a little more for them. Pay a little more for things that are labeled organic and hope they really are. Because you just know that the organically labeled stuff at Wally World, you know that there's somebody in Bentonville whose only job is to make sure that that stuff is really, really, honest to goodness, no kidding, organic, right? Sure there is. Sure there is. But anyway, there it was. The World Trade Organization said, hell no, New United States of America. It's discriminatory against poor Canada and Mexico for you to have a law that says stuff has to be labeled with words like born, raised, and slaughtered, born in Canada, raised and slaughtered in the New United States, or born, raised, and slaughtered in the New United States, or born in Mexico, raised in Canada, slaughtered in the New United States, or born in America, raised in Canada, slaughtered in... No, you can't have that. And now we have to take away that labeling so that Canada and Mexico will not retaliate against us. What form would the retaliation take? I don't know. Maybe this product comes from the United States of America. The United States of America is in the grips of right-wing conservatism. God only knows what is in this food. P.S. There is no God. P.P.S. Thus, nobody knows what's in this food. Do you really want to eat it? And the next thing you know, cans of Dinty Moore beef stew, now with 20% less downer cattle, just sort of stay on the shelves in Canada and Mexico. Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking about all those inspectors at Walmart. Wouldn't you love Wouldn't you love to meet Rabbi O'Reilly? The rabbi in charge of certifying the Walmart kosher ham. Oh, just because it's Walmart. Oh, I'll be okay in a minute. We originally got the bill not because American consumers really wanted country of origin labeling, but because cattle ranchers did. In the 2002 and 2008 farm bills, the laws were passed. Northern U.S. ranchers wanted it, but some consumer advocates said it helped shoppers know where their food comes from. Michael Froman, and this was a couple of weeks back, who is the U.S. Trade Representative, who is just absolutely neck deep in the, you know, mega bank, you know, the Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, blah, blah, Citi, yeah, culture, cabal, cult. He said that the Obama administration has long taken the position that one way to end this dispute is by repeal, but we do not consider that this is the only way Congress could bring the United States into compliance with its obligations. So anyway, they had them a little vote in the House of Representatives. And by a vote of 300 to 131, about 6 days ago, meat labeling got voted down. The Senate has not acted yet, but what a bunch of cravens. By way of explanation, John of Orange, the Speaker of the House, at least for as long as they let him pretend to be, the Republican teabaggers and such as the IRAC, said, the last thing American farmers need is for Congress to sit idly by as the national bureaucrats seek to punish them through retaliatory trade policies that could devastate agriculture as well as other industries. It would devastate agriculture. I'll be dipped. Who knew that we couldn't sell all of the food we raise in Merca here in Merca? Well, we probably could if we hadn't cut all the goddamn food stamp benefits now, couldn't we? Now, Canada and Mexico really are considering retaliatory measures. I would be okay if, with sufficient warning to the many millions of progressives there, if Mexico retaliated by seizing Texas. Oh, no, it's not going to happen. But Canada and Mexico have said pretty please to the World Trade Organization. And if the World Trade Organization says yay, then Canada and Mexico would impose retaliatory measures as tariffs against U.S. imports of beef, pork, cheese, corn, cherries, maple syrup, chocolate, and pasta, plus non-agricultural goods such as mattresses, wooden furniture, and jewelry, totaling about $3 billion. Depending on how the WTO rules, the U.S. will object, and it'll go to an appeal, which the U.S. will then lose. Asked for comment, the Canadian government of Stephen Harper said, the only way for the United States to avoid billions in retaliation by late summer is to ensure legislation repealing country of origin labeling passes the Senate and is signed by the President. That was Jerry Ritz, Canadian Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food. So there you have it. Mexico and Canada are holding a gun to the... Well, no, not a gun. They're holding a... Well, they're holding a checkbook to our heads. And if we want to know where our food comes from, and frankly, knowing the cattle raising practices of the United States of America, I'm not that put off by beef or pork or chicken from Mexico or Canada. It's the beef, pork, and chicken from, China that's every bit as likely to be rat that is kind of off-putting. And that's not anti-Chinese, that's not anti-Asian. It's actually anti-run-amok capitalism. Because the stories are out there of people being busted in China. Entrepreneurs who are selling rat as pork. Damn them, they are trying to make a vegan out of me yet. I will not go quietly. Yeah, honey, great, dinner, huh? Stewed old baseball glove. Wait a minute, that's made out of leather, isn't it? I'm vegan now. I see. It's a tempeh baseball glove. Well, yum, yum, under glass. But really, I mean, I know the American meat industry is really quite disgusting. I mean, CAFOs, cattle spending their lives up to their knees in their own poo, eating grain that they're not supposed to eat in the first place, didn't evolve to eat, which means they then have to be pumped full of antibiotics because they get sick eating the stuff they're not supposed to eat, but it fattens them up faster. And then there's the chickens. Because knowing what I know, I don't feel a surge of pride when I say beef proud, when I see beef proudly produced in the United States, because I know that the Republicans have gutted the food inspection industry, and the thing may have, you know, your average pound of hamburger may have been on the floor, you know, laying next to some, well, I'm not going to get so graphic and disgusting, but well, you can probably do it yourself. But moreover, it's a knowledge thing. I like to know where my food came from. But, that's true. I have Lottie noting in the chat room, Bob, you haven't even mentioned meat glue yet or pink slime. Yum, yum, just like Mother used to make. All right. And I appreciate the suggestion. I really do. Randy suggesting, try tofurkey. Tofurkey beer brats made from tofu. It's actually very good. Well, that's great, Randy. With me not eating it, that means there's a lot more for you, which is a good thing. And all this out of me bothering to read the damned guacamole box. Go figure. So, the Senate does have to pick it up and act on it. One does not know how the teabaggers will respond, or the freedom protectors. And I'm sure the wood furniture, chocolate and pasta, mattress, jewelry, maple syrup, cherries, cheese, corn, beef, pork lobbies will all be, probably already are, stampeding the Senate office building saying, you got to help us here. We're not going to be able to export to Canada and Mexico. And then we'll have to rely on Americans who don't have good enough jobs anymore to buy our crap. You know, to buy our crap. Aren't free trade agreements great? Oddly enough, however, the trade that happens under free trade agreements doesn't appear to be very free. I mean, isn't that, I mean, I don't want to get all teabaggery or anything, and we'll try to keep the fife and drum corps at bay, but isn't that a little bit galling? That we can be shoved around by the World Trade Organization, and that American grocery shoppers are being told by an organization that we wouldn't even know how to find with both hands, that we can't know where the food we eat comes from. Of course, I'm sure, sitting in corporate headquarters somewhere, the boys at Monsanto are going, excellent. Next thing, we won't let them know about the wombat gene. But there is cause for concern. There are massive abuses in food production standards in countries that aren't, and some that are, Australia and France and Germany and the like. But the countries that aren't, you know, like China, it happens. Rat passed off as pork or lamb. Then, of course, there's meat that falls on the floor in secret video, falls on the floor, picks up, falls on the floor. They throw it into the processing machine. Maybe the meat's kind of rotten, whatever. Right. I had a question coming from Ron in Raleigh. And I've thought about this myself. Question I can't get an answer to. Ron says, if we all become vegans, what would we do with all the food animals? Well, we would turn them out, we would turn them loose to run and be free. At which point, PETA would be driving around in vans, quietly euthanizing them. PETA is a disgusting organization, by the way. They do that, you know. They've got roving bands. They'll take little dogs and kitty cats off people's porches and kill them for them. Because overpopulation. But, well, at least we have two or three inspectors in the United States, overworked, underpaid, and utterly unappreciated, and viewed by the Republican Party, I'm sure, as job killers. But in answer to, no, really, Ron, where would all the meat animals go? I guess they would just wander all the wide open spaces, you know, great herds of chickens, kind of, yeah. And everybody gets a pig. Righto. Ron also points out, asking, has it really been that long? Today is the 800th anniversary of the signing of the Magna Carta. It's been one of the foundation documents of English common law, not the Bible, like the right-wing jugheads would have you believe. Worth a mention? Absolutely worth a mention. And Ron says, P.S., do not update Java. I'm warning you. I ain't a gonna. I think I've got it all set up so it can't do itself. Marty asking, before Mexico would hypothetically retake Texas, please give my parents time enough to leave. Well, that was the whole idea. We got to give notice. We want people like Jimmy Dick Perry bending the knee of fealty to Mexico City, not your mama and daddy. Luda, with an observation on guacamole. I love Mexican food, Luda says. It's my favorite. But buying food made in Mexico sounds scary. Seeing how bad the FDA in America is, just imagine Mexico's version. Well, that's true. But it's pretty tasty guacamole, so hopefully there's not, you know, too much cyanide in it. All right? Marty pointing out, if everyone in the U.S. went vegan, there'd be a foreign restaurant chain that would sue us at the WTO to force us to eat meat. And then they'd also sue to force farms to continue growing the animals for the food we'll have to eat. See, the WTO can do that. It's the exact polar opposite of, say, the freakout of the right wing about marriage equality. They apparently think that the WTO, or that the Supreme Court has the kind of awesome power that the WTO has, which it doesn't. The WTO, thanks to free trade agreements, thanks, Bill! Well, they can tell Americans what they can and cannot know. Imagine that. I mean, not to hammer the issue too hard, but imagine that being told by an unaccountable organization what you, as a citizen of the United States, may know or not know. I mean, damn, that's the government's job. Well, that's true. That's true. Gerald noting that kitty cats are libertarians. Yes. How do we know? Cats are libertarians, completely dependent on others, but fully convinced of their own independence. That's a libertarian. So much titanic right-wing intellect. So little time. Oh, we're 18 minutes before the hour, and I haven't mentioned fundraising. This evening, the fundraising goal stands at, $315. We closed at $365. We got some much-needed help for bills that require immediate payment this week, about $1,000 worth. And so the goal stands at $315 this evening, which will put us back to just a regular $200 fundraising goal tomorrow. 31 folks, 10 bucks a piece, etc. And, of course, you know the PayPal interface is under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The fundraising is not a joke, and no, there isn't really a hangar with a Gulfstream jet in it, and no, there really isn't a Maybach, and there, well, truly, there isn't a cabana technician either, nor a masseur, much to the enduring disgust of Agnes, the Viking warrior princess. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service while it yet remains viable before the Republicans kill it, in, say, like 2016, after all the progressives, if Hillary should happen to be nominated, go, voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil. I'm gonna stay home. And that way I will show them and teach them a lesson. By golly damn, President Rand Paul will fix it because Ralph Nader done told me. Right? Well, thank you, News Ninja Gene, for that uplifting little bit of sunlight. There's always insect meat, Bob. Locusts and wild honey. It was good for John the Baptist. It was good for John the Baptist. It was good for John the Baptist. It's really icky. Yeah, I'm sorry, Carol. No cabana boy, she asks. And what the hell have I been contributing to? Well, that was actually the lavish lifestyle we lead here of eating the fancy ramen noodles. But anyway, if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, drop me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Let me know it's on the way so that I can then give a heads up to Boss Man Wayne, who can leave the spider-proof gloves in his truck when he goes to open the echo chamber that is the mailbox. And reach in to pull out your parcel. Spider-proof gloves are kind of bulky otherwise, you know? Yeah. The address, of course, is The Horn, and that's how we should make out checks and money orders. The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And hopefully we'll get off and running since I finally got around to mentioning it. Oh, let's see here. It's not only progressives that are having a hissy over the possibility that Senator Secretary Clinton might be the nominee of the Democratic Party. I'll do everything I can, and I know many progressives are going to do everything they can to try to make sure that the nominee is Bernie Sanders. But it's a long way to roughly July of next year, you know, about 12 and a half months, really. We'll know by then. So, by all means, work, do what you can to help Bernie out. And then if it all comes crumbling down, well, you've got some company in the Hillary grief camp. Yep. You got some company. You'll be in good hands. See? Listen.
You ever heard cult leaders talk? All over the world, they have this saying. You know why you're here? Come into the cult. Release yourself. I mean, this is Jim Jones stuff. I can't even look at her. God, she's got to be president. Or I got to look at Jeb Bush. I may have to leave. I just can't handle it anymore. Oh, please. Okay, I can't look at it. Just go ahead and play her. I'm not going to look at her, though. Go ahead and play her. Let's go back to her in this weird mind control, like if aliens landed. We have come here to assimilate you. We come in peace. Let's go back to her literally talking to her brain-dead audience. She knows her audience are unconscious, in trance, fluoride heads. This is how they talk to their victims.
You hear that? Fluoride heads. Yes, of course. This is none other than Alex Jones. Alex Jones. Threatening to leave the country. I'd be in favor of him leaving the planet if it should happen that Secretary Senator Clinton is elected president of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth today, now, forever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you Hillary haters, you got a friend. You got a friend, Alex Jones.
Same old song.
Because of course, Alex Jones, and the rest of the Hillary haters are not fluoride heads.
Same old song.
A song called Yesterday.
A song called Yesterday. Creepy. Look at her smiling at her victims.
Shut up.
Her victims. Her victims. Because after all, the President Scott Walker will be ever so much less corporate. Right? Victims.
Adversaries like
I can't look at this.
Reinforced
oh my God, this
like
woman.
Israel, and I was in the Situation Room on the day we got Bin Laden.
Oh, more bull, more fairy tales. The day we got Bin Laden.
Yeah, that's a fairy tale too, because Bin Laden is alive and well, living with Elvis in George Bush's basement. Well, at least he didn't say cankles or pantsuits. He just went right for the alien analogy. Oh, goody. So, like I said, we are not wanting. We are not at all wanting in right-wing stupidity for this Titanic Tuesday. Let's see. Nope. Can't touch any of that. I mean, I checked my Twitter feed earlier today, and it was just with tweets about that. That guy with the thing on his head, who isn't, you know, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. And by the way, Steve in China, noting that little critter napping on that guy's head, it's not a mammal, it's a marsupial, lays ostrich-sized eggs, and is rumored to possess furry little koala-like ears. I don't want to see it when he takes it off his head at night. No. Steve also says, I imagine Steve's in China, by the way. Steve says, I imagine there is some weird stuff in the pork here, but if you're not too disturbed by the sight of a nipple or a whisker on the carcass, you can trust that it's pretty much pig, even with lipstick. As for things over there right now, well, there is the occasional horse in the Jack in the Box, or was it Burger King burger? And for a nation that once prided itself on being a beef producer, it's pretty ironic that in addition to all the sick and dying animals they do throw into the grinder, you can't get a quality of American-raised beef anymore anyway. South American, that's a different story. The Chinese love their beef, and it's as expensive here as back home. They don't have a history of, or the space for, beef production. But when they do buy it, they tend to purchase the better stuff from Uruguay or Argentina. All right, well, that's the whole thing. The American beef industry does not inspire confidence. Yes, the angry Indian wanting to know, was that Alex Jones? That was Alex Jones. And that's two now, as Gerald astutely noted. You mean like Ted Nugent left when Obama won? Oh, wait. Yeah, see, there's got to be a way to hold them to these vows, because the Nuge said he would either be dead or in prison with the election of Barack Obama. Sadly, neither one has occurred. And there he is with all those guns. Meanwhile, a note from Steve, New York. Subject line, Alex Jones. Him leaving might be just enough to make me vote for her. But he has to promise. None of this Rush hemorrhoid reneging. By the way, Bin Laden is not with Elvis. He's with Jim Morrison. Duh. Well, hell, I thought Elvis and Jim were together. I can't keep up. I can't keep up. Honest to God, it's kind of right up there with the Rachel Dolezal story. I do not understand why anybody is talking about that that bankruptcy code abusing billionaire talking about wanting to be president. When he doesn't really, he's got entirely too good a hustle with that TV show. He still got the TV show, doesn't he? I don't get it. At some point in time, I'll probably crack under the strain of the stupidity that will be flowing like a mighty sewer from his mouth. Today, the announcement speech was enough to make you crack. But I'm trying to hold fast. I'm trying to stand strong here. If we have to talk about him, I guess we can. But honest to God, I would like, by way of beginning the conversation, if we must have it, I would like the conversation to start with an explanation of why it's necessary to talk about him. I mean, I get some grief now and then when I run the occasional flush phlegm ball oxymoron quote. clip. But I explained that I run those because he's the titular head of the Republican Party. And he makes policy and then tells Rince Priebus of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat what the policy will be. So if you can explain to me why it's necessary to talk about this clown among clowns, I would appreciate the information, sincerely. I really would. Ron tells me, I have had some incredible Argentine beef. I have no doubt. I imagine it's right tasty. I mean, and then of course there's Japanese Kobe beef. But then again, is that even a thing anymore post-Fukushima? I don't know. Hashtag Jebbia campaign slogan. The Hispanic Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carol. Oh, by the way, by way of getting us started, there is an offer on the table I received moments ago of $75. $75 that will double your $75 to make $150, which will go halfway toward finishing out the evening's fundraising, which is a big hunk of help. So your 5 becomes 10, your 20, 40, your 30, 60. Yeah. Up to the first next $75 that come in, that gets doubled if the $75 comes in. You know how the matches work. And thus we will wait to find out. Hopefully, someone will take our anonymous contributor up on the offer. Bumper here.
Huh.
So, I will just kind of have to punt. We'll take our top of the hour break here, end of the filibuster, and we will have for you, this being Tuesday and all, we'll have the Green News Report in short order. Here's hoping you'll enjoy that as much as I do. Just not a lot of stuff that really seems to work. Just now. What do you do? Really didn't see this coming. Oh, well. Is what it is. We'll take the easy way out. And hey, we are on our way. Thank you very much to Jason for getting us started on the challenge this evening. Thank you very kindly, Jason. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Tuesday, June 16, 2015.
What the IRS, EPA, and the entire bureaucracy have done with overregulation, we can undo by act of Congress and order of the President.
Jeb Bush finally jumps in.
We will make America the clean energy superpower of the 21st century.
Hillary Clinton pushes for clean energy. Plus,
he is a gentleman. A holy man. A man with connections.
The Pope's summer blockbuster, coming this week to a planet near you.
All of those blockbusters and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And they'll say, I'm not a scientist. Well, then why don't they start listening to those who are?
Yeah, she doesn't really do snarky all that well, does she?
No.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you got a lot to get to today, but first, I feel as a public service announcement, I must note right off the top that the sun has not exploded.
Oh, really?
That's right.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm pretty sure. The Athens Banner-Herald in Georgia said on Monday that, quote, "This is the emergency broadcast system. Please ignore this message, as always. By the way, the sun just exploded, and we're all about to die."
Okay.
That was on their website. Apparently, they say it was, quote, "an unauthorized, updated news item. But to our knowledge, the sun has not exploded."
To their knowledge.
That's right. What do you have for us that is not fake news today, Desi Doyen?
Well, Jeb Bush on Monday officially announced his intention to seek the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. "We've been tracking the climate change positions of all the 2016 candidates, and Jeb, like nearly all the Republican contenders, is still stuck on denying the scientific consensus that global warming is man-made. Here he is just last month."
"The climate is changing. I don't think the science is clear of what percentage is man-made and what percentage is natural. I just don't. It's convoluted."
No, it's not really all that convoluted.
"And for the people to say the science is decided on this is just really arrogant, to be honest with you."
And nobody knows more about arrogance than a member of the Bush family, just saying.
Well, climate change didn't rate a mention in Jeb's big campaign announcement on Monday at Miami-Dade College, but he did promise to roll back Environmental Protection Agency standards and promised energy security.
"With North American resources and American ingenuity, we can finally achieve energy security for this nation, and with presidential leadership, we can make it happen within 5 years."
Ah, note he says North American resources, not American resources. He's talking about the tar sands up in Canada?
He certainly is.
Well, so I guess he's pushing for more foreign oil in our country. Thanks, Jeb.
Meanwhile, in a rally on Saturday in New York City to formally launch her campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton mocked Republicans for denying climate science and instead pledged to make the U.S. a global superpower in clean energy.
"Developing renewable power, wind, solar, advanced biofuels, building cleaner power plants, smarter electric grids, greener buildings, using additional fees and royalties from fossil fuel extraction to protect the environment and ease the transition for distressed communities to a more diverse and sustainable economic future."
Wow, sounds like she knows what she's talking about.
And unlike Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton actually mentions climate change.
"This will create millions of jobs and countless new businesses and enable America to lead the global fight against climate change."
Meanwhile, Shell Oil's massive Arctic drilling rig, the Polar Pioneer, was met by a flotilla of kayaktivists while attempting to leave Seattle's harbor early Monday morning. The kayaktivists were able to delay the rig for a short time, but then harbor police detained and released 24 people, including Seattle City Councilman Mike O'Brien, for what they said was breaching the safety zone around the rig that carries a $500 fine. Finally, anticipation is running high for an encyclical on the environment and climate change from Pope Francis. An encyclical is a teaching letter that's used to instruct bishops and Catholics all around the world. And now a parody movie trailer created by a Brazilian environmental group has Pope Francis literally kicking butt.
"Unstoppable.
Forgive me, Father.
Nature never forgives. If you slap it, it will always slap you back.
He is an easy man to follow and a hard man to silence. But in this epic battle against climate crisis, we can't let him fight alone."
Check out the full clip at our site, bradblog.com. It's very funny.
Yes.
I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Pope Francis in the encyclical.
To change everything, we need everyone.
coming to Earth this June.
Huh. That wasn't the usual bump out. Apparently Brad and Desi were having bumper problems this evening, too. Maybe it's a thing. It's 11 minutes past the hour, 11 minutes into the second hour of the program, this Titanic Tuesday, the 16th of June, 2015. And given the fact that there was mention there of the coming encyclical, which I guess debuts, is that the right word? Day after tomorrow. The leaked draft has some pretty interesting language. We are not God, it says. Well, okay. The earth precedes us and was given to us. This allows us to respond, but see that, okay, the earth precedes us and was given to us, and the church doesn't have a problem with evolution, but we're probably going to just stay out of that fight for purposes of this encyclical, and was given to us. Well, but it's kind of like it's sort of a tenancy agreement, isn't it? It's not fee simple ownership. It's one generation leases it. If you're understanding the whole human experience properly, one generation leases it with a remainder to the next, with some enlightened peoples considering the remainder going to the next seven generations. The earth precedes us and was given to us. This allows us to respond to an accusation made against Judeo-Christian thinking. It has been said... Okay, Frank, just leave out the Judeo part, okay? There's a history here, and you really don't want to be part of it. It has been said that from the story of Genesis, which invites us to subjugate the earth, Genesis 1:28, the savage exploit... This is a line. Now, this is good stuff. The savage exploitation of nature would be encouraged, presenting the image of human beings as ruler and destroyer. This is not the correct interpretation of the Bible as intended by the church. Or arguably, by God, if he really was, you know, there. Great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky that he is. Here's more fun stuff, though. Even though it is true that sometimes Christians have interpreted the scripture incorrectly, and it's the whole take dominion over the earth part that is troublesome here. In fact, there's an entire disgusting, filthy, heretical Protestant sect called Dominionists who think that you can do anything to the planet and get away with it and forget that nature bats last. Even though it is true that sometimes Christians have interpreted the scripture incorrectly, you know, not sometimes, most of the time, today we must forcefully refuse the idea that from the fact of being made in the image of God and from the mandate to subjugate the earth, that one can deduce an absolute dominion over other creatures. It is important to read the biblical texts in their context, with the right hermeneutics, and remember that these invite us to cultivate and care for the garden of the world. While cultivate means to plow or work a plot, to care for means to protect, heal, preserve, conserve, and to watch over. See, there's that cultivate. There's that sedentary agricultural sneaking in. Yeah. This implies a responsible reciprocity between human being and nature. Every community may take from the bounty of the earth that which it needs for its own survival. This is going to play great in Rancho Santa Fe, California, isn't it? Yeah, but we pay property taxes. But it also has the duty to protect it and ensure the continuity of its fertility for future generations. In the end, the earth is the Lord's, Psalm 24:1. To him belongs the earth and everything in it, Deuteronomy 10:14. Thus, God denies any pretense of absolute ownership. The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. With me you are but aliens and tenants, Leviticus 25:23. Uh, I would suggest that the heads of folks like Rafael Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, et al., et sec., will go pop. Rick Santorum is just going to be this, is just going to be this icky, squishy, squeaky toy sound when his little noggin implodes. And don't worry, there's not enough physical matter or density there to create any sort of space-time anomaly or anything like that, no. So it should be fun come Thursday, because the weirdos are already out there. Let's consider, since this is Titanic Tuesday, let us consider the Republican Party platform. The Republican Party is committed to domestic energy independence. The United States and its neighbors to the north and south have been blessed with abundant energy resources, tapped and untapped, traditional and alternative. Well, you know, the whole planet's kind of blessed with that alternative energy, you know, wind and sun. But then there's the Repiglican from Minnesota who says that God is not capricious. He's given us a creation that is dynamically stable. We're not going to run out of anything. This, he said, in regard to wanting to see more coal mined. Because our creation is dynamically stable. Tell that to the folks who used to be from Fukushima, the dynamically stable part. They'll probably get a real chuckle out of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You betcha. And then there's something I saw early this morning. Didn't sleep real well last night. A little something that happened over on Chicken Noodle News. You're going to love this. We all know what happens with fracking. We know about the earthquakes because, you know, we're paying attention. We know about the water that catches fire. We know about the millions and millions and millions of gallons of potable water that are ruined as a result of its use in fracking. Imagine that, being able to become wildly wealthy off of something that turns water into a single-use commodity. Whoa! So, over on the Chicken Noodle News, good old Fareed Zakaria, who sounds ever so serious, hosted a goomer by the name of Harvard Business School Professor Michael Porter. And I'm not trying to sound anti-intellectual here, but at this point in time, given all the blessings that the Harvard School of Business has bestowed upon America, I'm thinking Bishop Willard Romney, I'm thinking George W. Bush, elder brother of Jeb Bush. I'm thinking we could probably look at the Harvard School of Business and say, okay, you can stop now. We're blessed enough. We're just totally blessed. Stop already. But no. Harvard Business School professor Michael Porter is out there flacking for frackers. Flacking for fracking. Now, this comes off all intellectually and brainy-ish, but don't discount the possible need for the hockey puck. This is from the Chicken Noodle News program, Global Public Square, hosted by Fareed Zakaria, which is anything but a public square. We've got a hell of a lot more of a public square going on here at the Horn than Fareed Zakaria could ever dream of. Hell, Fareed probably makes more in a single episode of Sunday than it takes to run the Horn for an entire year. Public square. So, who, you might ask, is Harvard Business School professor Michael Porter? Well, he's a frack flack. Back in 2011, he published an op-ed at the New York Times in which he said, gasoline prices are above $4 per gallon in much of the country, a reminder that our dependence on oil carries a great cost. Yada, 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 yada. Our trade deficit arises in great measure from the hundreds of billions of dollars we pay for foreign oil. The imbalances threaten America's economics, yada, yada, yada. And then, okay, to compete globally, we need to encourage clean energy innovation. Good, 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 good. Wait, oh, there's a clause. There's a phrase. While letting the market decide which particular technologies prevail. Yeah. And, of course, he wants an emissions charge of $5 per ton on greenhouse gases. Okay, okay. Carbon tax of sorts. But then, he says, technological advances have made vast quantities of domestic shale gas accessible. The shift to gas as a transitional fuel would allow the United States to cut greenhouse gas emissions by up to 50% over the next decade. Now, it is not his fault, it is not Michael E. Porter's fault, that maybe the science hadn't arrived quite yet that shows that the emissions of methane into the atmosphere from stuff like fracking is even more nasty than many forms of combusted carbon. No. The prospect of a steadily rising emissions charge would focus the private sector's attention on energy saving and carbon-reducing innovations. The calculus for investments would immediately change. Anyone pursuing an energy-consuming project, like a power plant, would factor in a rising long-term charge into their choice of technology. People buying new cars would have an added incentive to think about fuel economy. Okay, okay, okay. But it all rolls back around to his buddy, the frackers. Entrepreneurial spirit would be unleashed in companies from multinational enterprises to back-of-the-garage inventors by stimulating major gains in energy productivity. So, flash forward in time to the Global Public Square featuring Fareed Zakaria and Harvard Business School professor Michael Porter. No, Michael, really, stop helping.
Report out this week by BP says that in 2014, the United States became the world's largest oil producer, overtaking Saudi Arabia. And it says America is now the biggest oil and natural gas producer, knocking Russia off the top spot. Much to the chagrin of environmentalists, it is an extraordinary time for carbon-based energy production.
I'm getting really pissed off with that constant drumbeat, that constant use of the line, the word environmentalist. Much to the chagrin of environmentalists. No, Fareed, you dumbass. Much to the chagrin of people who drink water and breathe air. Much to the chagrin of people who live on planet Earth. Planet A. And hint, Fareed, there's no goddamn planet B. Environmentalists.
Environmentalist sounds, it sounds like a damn club. It sounds like something you do with your spare time. It sounds like a hobby.
Environmentalist.
How about existential human rights campaigners? Or how about human rights campaigners? But no. See, CNN takes a ton of money from the coal industry and the gas industry and the oil industry, so we can't be talking about the people who oppose the people who sign CNN's checks and indirectly Fareed's check as human rights activists, because then it would become apparent that the people the human rights activists are campaigning against are indeed the human rights violators, are the, yes, aforementioned coal, oil, and gas industries. Go on, Fareed, go on.
In the United States. But my next guest will make the case that it's not bad. In fact, he says it's almost all positive. How so? Michael Porter is a professor at the Harvard Business School and is said to be the world's most cited scholar on matters of business and economics.
Well, how lovely for him. I'll bet you Michael Porter has never lived in a house at the foot of a mountaintop removal operation and breathed toxic blasting dust day in and day out, or maybe gone to the doctor with a beloved family member and sat there as the doctor holds their hands and says, "Well, honey, you're going to die. You've got cancer." Cole keeps the lights on. Nah, I'm guessing he's never done that. I'm guessing he's never lived downstream from down aquifer from a fracking operation where the water looks like tomato soup or stinks of rotten eggs and death or is perhaps flammable. No. Michael, the world's most cited, blah, 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 Harvard Business School, Michael Porter. Michael Porter lives in a comfortable little bubble world where he can just think with his very large brain, thinkity, all day long. Thinkity, think. Big ideas, think, about how goddamn wonderful fracking is.
He and the Boston Consulting Group have just published a study called America's Unconventional Energy Opportunity, a Win-Win Plan for the Economy, the Environment, and a Lower Carbon, Cleaner Energy Future.
Yeah, we're going to have a lower carbon, clean energy future by burning more frack gas. And, you know, if it turns out that there's not a goddamn drop of water left by the time they're done, well, hell, we'll all just sit and burn gas and enjoy the warmth and heat and light, won't we? Sure. Take it away, Harvard Business School professor Michael Porter. I'll bet he's got one of those Harvard Business School MBA more bigger asshole degrees, don't you?
Long title, it says a lot. But let's start by understanding how surprising this has been. In 2005, what did America look like?
Well, in 2005, Fareed, we were involved in an illegal war in Iraq, and things were ramping up pretty nasty-like, and lots of American soldiers were coming home in cardboard boxes to Dover, Delaware, where we weren't allowed to see them being offloaded, their corpses in those boxes, draped, of course, in flags. We weren't allowed to see that, but we were kind of keeping an attempt at the staggering, annoying at least, and quite possibly, you know, for the relatives of the people coming home in the boxes, a grievous amount of death involved in that nasty illegal war. Of course, at the same time, Fareed, what America looked like in 2005 is it looked like a country that was imposing something on the order of 1 million civilian deaths on Iraq, which just happened to be a country with a lot of oil in it. That's what America looked like. America looked like a country where if you showed up with a Defeat Bush t-shirt on, you could have your happy ass hauled off to jail by the Charleston Police Department of Charleston, West Virginia, or you could be thrown in jail in South Carolina for violating the free speech zone that was there to keep Dim Leader from ever knowing that anybody didn't like him. In 2005, what did America look like? Well, goodness me. It looked like a country, the presidency of which had been handed to an idiot by a group of hyper-politicized Supreme Court justices who were damned well determined to make sure that none of that Al Gore liberalism snuck into the United States of America. That's what America... Oh, but wait, you're not... Oh, you want to... Yeah, of course, Fareed. You're talking about the real America. You know, the slippery, slimy, hydrocarbon America. Right. The America fronted by the people who indirectly sign your paycheck, Fareed. Got it.
Energy. America was nowhere in terms of this new resource. We just had the conventional depleting supplies of oil and gas. We were approaching in the conventional ways. And then this technological revolution that had been bubbling along, that had been supported actually by public policy, took off. And we ended up with being the leading energy producer in the world.
So let's look at the natural gas production, which if you look at this chart, it just, as you say, it just spikes up extraordinarily.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I think most people don't realize is that this is also true of oil.
Yes.
So if you look at what oil production looks like in the United States, it's declining, 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 and then you see this extraordinary spike. What's this about?
Well, before we find out what that's about, Notice how I said that, you know, we were just bubbling along. Just bubble, 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 bubble. Bubble, 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 bubble. Bubbling along. You know what you need for bubbles? Air and water. You know what ruins a shit ton of air and water? Fracking. But, you know, who the hell am I, right? I'm just an environmentalist.
That's about the technology allowing you to actually develop a resource that we didn't think was that valuable, which is this oil or gas locked into shale. And this took the hydraulic fracturing, which people call fracking, which is something we should talk about, because the word fracking is really getting in the way here.
Well, the word fracking is really getting in the way. I wonder if fracking, not the word, but the practice, is really getting in the way of people having clean water and clean air. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We won't be talking about that, because, after all, Michael Porter is the most quoted man in the world ever. Yeah. The word fracking is getting in the way. We wish those environmentalists would quit calling it fracking.
In terms of the reaction people have.
Why do you say that the word fracking is getting in the way?
Well, I mean, if you're at a party and you talk about, you say, what do you think of fracking? You know, the typical person is going to kind of recoil because they're going to hear stories about earthquakes.
Wait a minute. Because, see, that's, I don't know about you, but that's where we talk about fracking. Parties. I mean, we're all standing around, you know, with our very thin stemware, and we've got a nice chilled martini. We stir our martinis. We do not shake, because only the heathen shakes a martini, because after all, you know, you always run the risk of bruising the gin if you shake your martini. We stir. We stir until it's just delightfully chilled, and then we strain it. And usually with a couple of those nice-sized cocktail olives, you know, it beats the hell out of having to eat dinner when you're drinking dinner in the first place. But so we're standing there, and we might have a canapé or two. You know, it is, after all, a party. But we're standing around the party, and someone mentions fracking, and I say, oh, dear, fracking, goodness me. My stars and garters, fracking. Because, well, you know, a party conversation, after all, darling. You understand party conversation. Isn't that just beautiful? Isn't that just goddamn lovely? How conversations about fracking take place at parties and not around the dinner table or the kitchen table of people who are far, far, far the fuck away from Harvard, who've never seen the inside of Harvard Yard, who are really far more concerned about whether or not they can drink, bathe in, and maybe make baby formula out of the water that's on fire coming out of their taps. But, you know, someone says fracking, and they think about earthquakes. earthquakes, for heaven's sakes, at the party where we're talking about fracking. What a pissant. Yeah, I'm kind of there with Carol. They should frack that California neighborhood that thinks they deserve all the water. Wonder if they'd feel the same if their golf course caught fire. Fuck their golf course, Carol. Wonder if they'd feel the same if their water coming out of their garden hose for their beautiful gardens and their lovely flowers caught fire. Well, I mean, there I was, just watering my prized begonias. And yes, sometimes I like to smoke a nice cigar while I'm out watering. And I let it get a little close to the water. Boom! And the next thing you know, my garden hose turned into a flamethrower, and my scarlet begonias were crisp. Wonder if Michael Porter would take it a little more seriously if his water exploded. I mean, you're standing around at a party. It happened to me just last week. We were standing at a party, and someone said fracking, and I said, you know, that word is really getting in the way. Lines like that really do call to mind the great philosopher, Jeff Spicoli.
You dick!
Yeah. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Say, Bob, isn't Fareed Zakaria Arabic for Juan Williams? One begins to think so. Subject line, fracking talk at a party. Michael says, worse yet, the bastard says, one hears stories of earthquakes. Because, of course, Michael Porter would never go anywhere where the earthquakes actually happened. I mean, what does he look like? A member of the hoi polloi? He didn't work this hard to have to live out there in you know, Frackistan. And, of course, at the same time, they font up on the screen, the New York Times, fracking chemicals detected in Pennsylvania drinking water. The Huffington Post, states with fracking see surge in earthquake activity. Of course, then the main font, America's new era of energy. Porter, the word fracking is really getting in the way here. Let's go back. I want to hear more about these parties that Mr. Porter attends.
You say, what do you think of fracking? You know, the typical person is going to kind of recoil. Because they're going to hear stories about earthquakes, and they're going to have read about water and contamination and all kinds of environmental issues. And by the way, they're real. There are those issues. But what I don't think people...
Well, that's just damn generous of you, Michael, to point out that the fracking and the fracking earthquakes and the poisoned water are real. The question, I suppose, is whether or not the people who are having to deal with them are as real as the earthquakes and the poisonous water are. Do please continue, Michael.
What you understand is that those environmental issues are, we're making huge progress in kind of beating those down and doing it better.
Huge progress, I tell you. We're beating it down, making it better. I mean, we're going to have less earthquakes in places that never had earthquakes before, but now they're just going to have some instead of, like, gazoo billions. And there will be less people who are bathing their children in water that is so goddamn toxic that the little cancer-causing chemicals pass right through the skin and into their little children's bloodstreams and their lungs and their brains and their hearts and their livers and their guts and their toenails. I mean, we're going to have some of those, but we're getting much better about it. I mean, understand, we are never, ever going to get to the point where we're not poisoning people, but we're just going to poison lots of them. But, you know, you can't make an omelet unless you break a few proles. But by the way, the earthquakes are real. Yeah, I guess, Carol, I think you're right. He thinks we're too fucking stupid to understand what hydraulic fracturing is. Well, that's why we have to keep calling it hydraulic fracturing. I mean, fracking just sounds like something halfway dirty that one does with a seedy whore that one has picked up when one goes slumming in some of the seedier parts of Boston, like I did a couple of nights ago. That, oh, my God, we're on television.
And what people don't associate with fracking is this enormous economic transformation that's going on.
See, the goddess of irony almost kicked him right in his bespoke trousers. This enormous economic transformation, because what it actually is an enormous economic transference of wealth from people who used to have water and not earthquakey ground, to people who don't have earthquakey ground and still have water and now have the money. It is. It is a remarkable economic transformation, I tell you. And they wonder why we say eat the rich.
We now are by far the lowest energy cost nation in the world.
And of course, we are the lowest cost energy nation in the world because we continue to externalize those costs so that we don't take into account. I mean, we don't take into account how much it costs a family to give them cancer so that some corporations can make vast amounts of untold wealth so that we can pump methane into the atmosphere and get the whole goddamn planet a little bit more greenhousey. But we don't count that, you see.
Every household has gotten $800 bonus every year in terms of lower energy prices.
Did you know that? Oh, little people, why aren't you saying thank you to the frackers? They are giving you an $800 bonus in the form of reduced energy costs. What was that, proles? You didn't really know that? Well, that's because you're stupid little proles. What? Oh, you spent your $800 and more on doctor bills because the baby's sick. Well, if you didn't live there in Frackistan, well, maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you should come and be a professor at the Harvard Business School like I am. But no, stay the fuck away. I've got mine. Fuck you.
We've had 2.7 million jobs, we estimate, created since 2005. That's about half of all the jobs created since 2005.
And they're wonderful jobs, I have to tell you. They are absolutely magnificent jobs. For instance, in Pennsylvania, where they used to have a lot of unions, well, now a fracking pipeline worker can be a welder. And, you see, where he used to make a decent living, now, thanks to fracking, we've created 2.7 million jobs for welders who now make $10 an hour with no goddamn benefits. Isn't that wonderful? It is a remarkable economic transformation. Really, really, Michael Porter, quit while you're ahead. Well, you're a dickhead. No, I'm sorry. He's getting me upset.
Bonus every year in terms of lower energy prices. We've had 2.7 million jobs, we estimate, created since 2005. That's about half of all the jobs created since 2005. And we have an opportunity to...
And of course, the other half a quarter of them were jobs that we created in the healthcare industry to help take care of all the people the fracking has made sick. And then there's the other jobs that are just your basic minimum wage, got to have three of them in order to survive jobs that help the little people enjoy that $800 bonus we're giving them every year. Apparently Michael Porter is getting under the skin of our friend Michael. Why doesn't this schmuck just come out and say the bottom line is fracking has a favorable benefit-cost analysis? He probably would also say, this is a free country. These people choose to stay there. They can move anywhere they want. It's a miracle. Yeah, exactly. Well, the assholes you have always with you. Wonder what he's going to think of Pope Frank's encyclical.
That's about half of all the jobs created since 2005. And we have an opportunity to continue this growth process and spread it throughout our entire economy. So at a time when...
Wait. It hasn't gotten around enough? There aren't enough people poisoned already? There aren't enough earthquakes yet?
Well, I did say we were getting better about it.
There's not enough flammable water? Where's all the climate change talk? Oh, wait a minute. No, we're not going to mention that, are we?
And our economy is not performing well, where we are facing real challenges, where the middle class are not moving ahead, growth is slow.
I don't think that's on account of we're not fracking enough. I think it might have something to do with the predatory behavior of the banksters who finance the damn fracking.
Yes, yes, yes. I know. Murphy and Biff don't talk about such things up at their parties in the Hamptons.
This is by far the single biggest opportunity we have.
Your calculation in this report is that...
I think this is the part of the program where Fareed gives Michael a little bit of a fluffing.
Oil and natural gas, the fracking essentially, are adding $430 billion to the economy every year.
At least. Yeah.
And so they've got a graphic up on the screen now. Annual contributions to U.S. GDP greater than $430 billion. Jobs supported, 2.7 million. Annual savings from low cost of natural gas, $800 per household. Underneath the banner, Porter, we're making huge progress on environmental issues related to fracking. Progress. You know what? I'm not so sure that that's the right word, progress. Because we had a baseline before they started fracking, and that baseline would be, say, calculated in terms of clean water and clean air, fit for human consumption on both counts, amount of CO2 being produced into the atmosphere, boiling down into the sea, causing salinity, boiling, whatever. And now, after fracking, with fracking ongoing, that baseline number is lower. So I don't think you can call that progress unless we're just going to give up on the English language altogether and say Orwell was right.
That's our best estimate, and that's as big as a large state. This field is much bigger than the auto industry. This is a huge field, and it's just starting because it really starts with the production of gas and oil, but then it gets used to generate power. That's growing. It'll continue to grow. It starts getting used as a feedstock. Our petrochemical industry is revitalizing in America.
It gets used as a feedstock? Is there some Harvard School of Business definition of feedstock that I'm not contemplating? Because I'm thinking like silage. Like back when I used to keep a garden at the end of the garden time, the local cattle farm, a guy might keep two or three, feeder steers or whatever, maybe have a dairy cow, and you come around and say, hey, Bob, would you mind if I carried away all your old corn stalks? My cattle love it. And I'd go, well, hey, sure, you're welcome to it. Feedstock. Are we have some sort of compressed natural gas teats that the pigs and chickens and cattle and goats and lambs just go and suckle off of now? What the is this? Oh dear. Steve in New York with an email. He says, "Now I get it. If fracking is our answer, why not more lethal things? Cigarettes, crack, crystal meth? Oh, and a la Jonathan Swift, we can just get rid of the people we kill by cooking them for food or burning them as energy. Urethra!" meanwhile, Carol would like to know, can we ask Fareed what the Harvard guy's throne smells like? Because it's pretty clear that Fareed's been sniffing it. Yeah. And we ain't done. I told you this had hockey puck potential.
Plastics industry is revitalizing. A lot of
because energy costs
energy.
Are
so...
Oh, goddamn, now we're back to the graduate. I got one word for you, kid. Plastics. Okay, two words. Fracking. Plastics. Yeah. It'd make me put my goggles on and go back down to the bottom of the pool, too.
Costs are so low. And in an advanced industrial country... Energy is such a large part. Labor is actually not such a large
exactly.
part.
Exactly. So the
I don't think he meant it that way, but Fareed just said a mouthful. Labor is not such a large part. And you know it's not. Because there are lots and lots of fracking field workers who get hurt on the job. And, for instance, a lot of the companies, and I know this because I've got this buddy who's a pro-fracking lawyer who also happens to represent people injured on the job, and they were getting hurt all over the place, and the companies they worked for would say, now, son, if you get hurt on the job, remember, workers' compensation in Texas is going to cover you. Or Oklahoma. And, of course, workers' compensation in Texas and Oklahoma are right up there with getting an apple and a road map. So my buddy was running ads saying, hey, fracking field workers, you get hurt fracking in Pennsylvania, you're entitled to Pennsylvania workers' compensation. Call me. Because Pennsylvania workers' compensation was substantially better than the not much workers' compensation at all, which obtains in Texas and Oklahoma. Anyway.
So, for example, our electricity, industrial electricity prices are about one half of our other major trading partners, and our gas prices are about a third of our major trading partners. So all of a sudden...
Then why don't we have the industries of our major trading partners? And by major trading partners, of course, Michael Porter means China. There's that free trade for you again. If it's easier to, better to do energy prices are lower here in the greatest country in the world on earth now forever today, then why did the steel industry get packed up piece by piece, numbered panel by numbered panel, and shipped to China? What happened to the tire industry? What happened to my dad's silicon furnace there in Lister Hill, Alabama? Because somehow or another, they're making it work. But fracking good.
Out of nowhere, a bunch of crazy guys, you know, in Texas mostly.
That's the single truest statement he's made. Out of nowhere, a bunch of crazy guys in Texas mostly. Yeah. Well, hell, we've already turned Texas into a toxic waste pit. Why shouldn't we do it to the rest of America? I mean, it's good for us. Look, I mean, I remember when the oil market collapsed and my daddy had to hock his Rolex and his Porsche down in Houston. Hell, I got me a Maybach now, and Rolex is too down the market scale for me. Uh-huh. Watches, damn. I bought me a little Mexican feller, just tells me what time it is whenever I ask him. That's your status. Crazy guys from Texas.
Have created this enormous competitive advantage for the United States, but it's come with some environmental concerns.
Yeah, some. Just some environmental concerns. Now they're not environmental problems. It's not a problem when your water catches fire coming out of the tap. It's a concern. Because, see, the environmentalists are concern trolls. I mean, you'd let your tap water catch fire if you knew it was good for some crazy guy in Texas, wouldn't you? You wouldn't? Why do you hate America? What's wrong with you?
So let's talk about the environmental issues.
Let's do, Fareed. Sniff that seat real good. The environmental issues. Can you not say problem, Fareed? I mean, we understand that Michael Porter can't say problem, but can you not either? Well, hell no, of course you can't. Because somebody from the American Petroleum Institute would be on the phone trying to get your ass on the bricks if you said there were problems. And I mean, after all, they're environmental problems. You know, maybe the peonies and the petunias don't grow quite right. I mean, it's an environmental concern. It's a concern. It's an issue. Hey, Fareed, if your kid had never had a sugary beverage in her life, and you bathed them every day just like you're expected to, and you had them brush their teeth 5 or 6 times a day after every meal like the dentist wants you to, and for some reason or another, all your kid's teeth rotted out in her head, and it turned out the water was full of fracking poison, and that was why they dissolved, just dissolved, not so much rotted, just dissolved, would it still be an environmental issue? Or would it be a human public health problem? Because, see, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about environmental issues. We're talking about a public health crisis driven by the inexorable lust for more power and more wealth that attends these crazy guys from Texas mostly, and the people who fluff them like Michael Porter. Let's talk about these issues. Now, just so you'll know, this segment, four minutes and 46 seconds of it, have been spent fluffing, there's that word again, shining up, polishing the knob of the fracking industry. The clip itself is 6 minutes and 5 seconds long. That means there is 1 minute and 19 seconds left in the segment in which to deal with these environmental issues. Are you expecting that this is that moment when suddenly Fareed Zakaria is going to turn into a modern day incarnation of Edward R. Murrow and look at Michael Porter and say, "Have you no shame?" No, he's not. Come on. This is Murka. This is the for-profit media.
You know, there are earthquakes that people talk about. This.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are earthquakes. And you know, people talk about them. There are earthquakes that people talk about. There are not earthquakes that really happen. It's just more of that party talk where the finger sandwiches are served and the stemware is oh so thin and lovely, and when you wet it with a little bit of your martini and go around the rim, it plays a perfect A. Talked about. after qualifier after qualifier. Why, Fareed, can't you say, there are the earthquakes? What about them? No, there are the earthquakes that are talked about.
Talk about what happens to water, and let's talk about methane that gets released.
Yes.
Which of these should we worry about, and can good regulation deal with them?
No, Fareed. Good regulation can't deal with them because there's not going to be any good regulation because this country is not of a political mood or a social mindset to believe that, or to know that regulation can be effective. Secondarily, since we're talking about the energy industry, and you can take this as gospel from me, having spent more than 10 years dealing with the regulatory framework of the coal industry, a regulation is designed first and foremost to make sure that that which is being regulated continues to happen. There are no mechanisms in these regulatory agencies for saying stop it. The enabling legislation of mountaintop removal, for instance, the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, does not have a single thing within it that says, oh, by the way, if down the road we find out we're poisoning people, it all stops. It ain't there, because the purpose of the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act is to make sure that there is more and more and more and more coal extraction. Its purpose is not to protect the people against the extraction, and the same thing applies to fracking and oil drilling. And by the way, I love the idea of which of these, you know, the earthquakes that people talk about, or the water issues that people talk about, or the lack of regulation that people talk about, which of these should we be concerned about? All of them, Fareed, you freaking idiot! Good God, and this passes for journalism. Well, let's hear Michael Porter's answer. He, after all, he only has a minute and 7 seconds to tell us, to give us the great big magic bullet answer, right?
Well, I think we should worry about them all.
We should worry about them. But that's, you know, all we can really do. The genie's out of the bottle. You can't unfrack fracked water. You can't unpoison poisoned water. And by the way, we mentioned the earthquakes. We mentioned the water. We mentioned the lack of regulatory structure. You know what never got mentioned? Yeah, that thing you can't see that you can't live without. Air. There's tons of filth going into the air from these frack pads. And to the extent that it is tiny particulated matter, it's similar to the particulate poisons going into the air near mountaintop removal sites, which little Timmy then breathes and little Timmy then dies. But thank you, Michael Porter. You want to worry about all of it.
And I think one of my big concerns here is how the U.S. industry has really been working counterproductively to its own long-term interests.
Oh, well, we just need a little more enlightenment in the industry. But the industry must continue because, well, it's cost-benefit analysis, as noted previously. The frack gas is more important than human life. But, you know, doggone it, those crazy guys from Texas mostly, they've been operating against
There's been too much denial in the industry. There's been, oh, no, we're not causing those earthquakes. Oh, no, the water's not a problem. And it is. I mean, there are real documented problems. They're significant. The good news is that And we've done a deep dive on this. In all of these areas, and there are areas of congestion, and there's even more than you mentioned, in all these areas, the practice is improving.
Oh, well, it's getting better. But it's never going to get completely well. Because the only way to get it completely well is to stop it. And then you're left with what they've already done. And by the way, you know why the industry's in denial, Michael Porter? I mean, I would think you could figure this out, you being all Harvard Business School-y and everything, and a professor and whatnot. They're in denial because if any of this was ever to sneak into a courtroom, it would bankrupt them into the Stone Age. And then they'd only be rich, not really, really obscenely, filthy, disgustingly rich, which is the only thing that makes them happy.
We're getting better. We're able to control most of these problems. And what we did also was to actually do a study, and it doesn't cost much to reduce these problems.
It doesn't cost much to reduce these problems. Important word, reduce. It doesn't cost much to make these problems somewhat less than the problems they already are, and yet will still remain problems. Reduce. Now, we're almost out of time with Harvard Business School Professor Michael Porter, so I'm sure Fareed Zakaria won't have time to ask him, hey, Harvard Business School Professor Michael Porter, most quoted man on earth, what would it cost to eliminate the problems? Oh, you couldn't do that.
You just have to do things right. We can control these problems, including earthquakes, but we're not telling that story. The general public hasn't heard that story.
Because that's all it is. A story. A fable. A myth. Yes? We can control the earthquakes. How are you going to clean up the water, Michael? Oh, we can't do that. Oh! Yeah, see, I said reduce, not eliminate. All them little adjectives and adverbs banging around there. You know, much. What the f*** does much mean, Michael?
They think that these problems are endemic and unfixable, but they're really not.
Yeah, they are. They, you know, the people who talk about fracking at parties. And you know what? The sad thing is, there really are people who talk about fracking at parties. And they're the people who set the policy. They're the people who determine how the campaigns will go. They are the people who fund the campaigns if there is a campaign. And they're the people who, if they decide that you're too forceful or that you're a little too determined to stop it altogether, well, they're the people talking about it at parties who will make sure that you never have sufficient funds with which to press your human rights agenda. Just ask Sandra Steingraber. Look up Sandra Steingraber, Illinois, fracking. I think you'll find a few posts by our dear friend Jeff Biggers on the topic. Yeah, do it, sure. Yeah, I know, Jim, I know. Poised poison water. Oh, hell, Bob, just get one of those faucet filters. Yeah, we did. And get one of those faucet filters and then pour it through a Brita filter and then bang! It's still poison. Yep. By the way, we are at 10 minutes past the hour, 50 minutes remaining in the program. We are still looking for $70 to match the matching offer that is sitting on the table and getting ready to leave town. $70 matches, finishes off the matching offer, and that puts us only, $165 away from finishing the evening's fundraising. Thank you very kindly, anonymous contributor, for your matching offer. And thank you very kindly to Jason for jumping in and getting started on the match. Now we need seven folks at $10 or 14 folks at $5 or one person at 70 or, and the match will be made, and that'll get us a right smart ways down the road toward keeping out of keeping from getting into a hole farther than we see the top of. Thank you indeed. So we'll take a little break. Phone lines are open, by the way. 304-574-8178 being the one number. And then there's the stress line. 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676. The stress line, named in honor of our friend, gone but not forgotten, Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. Either one's wide open, and you are welcome to participate if you prefer to use Skype. The Skype-to-Skype outreach is Bob Kincaid Horn. Jump right in. The conversation will be just dandy.
Once I had a woman I could
17 minutes past the hour, and big thanks going out to Thomas for joining in with Jason. We have only $60 to go to make the $75 anonymous matching offer that was put on the table earlier this evening. Hopefully that will be met and taken care of sooner rather than later. And then whatever's left over, we'll deal with tomorrow night. Let's run over to the stress line where Jim awaits in Louisiana Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
I don't know.
That's a typical story of corporate America, man. Externalize the cost, internalize the profits.
Oh, you know it.
It just permeates the whole society, as I see it. It's like, maybe I had to take a drug test to get my old job back, right? So, I ponied up, I yearned in a little thing, and I get a phone call today. And after going through four or five people on the way, he came up positive for phenobarbital. I've been taking it for 43 years. And I felt like going to a little, brain surgery blues rant. They cut to the back of my skull and all that fun and my stuff, fun and hygiene stuff. Do you have a prescription? Yeah, I've had one for 43 years. And I kind of calmed down, but at first it just kind of pisses you off.
Because you're there's something dirty about you.
Yeah. And it's like, and I threw in, I did, if I don't take it in about 24, 48 hours, maybe 72, maybe hours, I start flipping around in an epileptic seizure. And then, there was a doctor's number and all that. Now I got to double check on her ass to make sure she followed through. And with my big part-time employer, let him know so I can get put back out to Vegas or something. We'll see. But that reminds me of another story I just heard today on the radio about, and you probably heard it or maybe mentioned it because I didn't catch all the show where the paraplegic guy in Colorado.
I haven't
mentioned it,
but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, tell poor people. Guy. Go ahead. Tell folks.
Poor guy. Paraplegic, or I think I have the right term. He uses marijuana because he's paraplegic, or he basically can't move, and that's the only way he gets released from the pain. But he's losing his job at what company? I forgot. I wanted to mention the name of the company because I want to start a boycott of him. Can I get on the internet with him? I mentioned their name about how they're doing that, but they. They made him take a drug test, and he failed it. They can't even, the Colorado Colorado court ruled that he's not exempt. There's no exemption. And they could try to appeal it, but from what I hear, that's a no gamer. But that's just how screwed up the court system, the whole corporate system is. I see it.
Yeah.
And I guess you got to. You're kind of used to it. I'm used to it, but sometimes
as noted previously, Jim, I think we tend to suffer from a bit of outrage fatigue, but that's an unfair statement to make in the face of a story like that. That guy's not suffering from outrage fatigue. He's just another abused human being inside a country that has become brutal and becomes more so daily.
I'd say almost by the second.
Oh, I think you could probably quantify it to that that small a period of time.
I really thought, I don't know the guy or anything. Just, what's he going to do? It's like, what's the... I got mine.
Yeah, Igumfu.
Igumfu, man. Should be the. I think they should put that instead of Ichor Ishin, it should be Igum Fu.
Yeah, just put Igum
Fu. On all the coins.
Yeah, just put Igum Fu on all the money.
Well, that would be the place to play, because that's definitely what it always boiled down to. I don't know why I keep on thinking. I used to think, quote unquote, our generation was the one that was going to change things. And now I think of it, I think, God, that was delusional thinking. Yeah. We're each generation thinks it's that much different, but it basically, unfortunately, doesn't seem really big. I hope I'm wrong, but maybe the millennials will change that, but I don't see how. Because the capitalist system is a hold on everybody, you know?
Right. Everybody is made complicit, whether they like it or not. Everybody is enthralled to it. Everybody is in debt to it. Everybody is indentured to it. I won't say enslaved, because that word is far too freighted with far too much meaning. But indentured? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, overturning it becomes nigh impossible. Now, on the other hand, and you and I share the same dim view of generally dim view of Christianity, but Pope Frank has gotten to the point where he's just needling the capitalists, you know, on purpose, and you know, more power to him.
Yeah.
This latest, and we're not even talking now about. You know, the encyclical that's coming up, this is something entirely different. And it's pretty much a real Lulu. The National Catholic Reporter has published a story, and I have since found out that the NCR is kind of it's deemed a sort of, you know, liberal Catholic publication.
Isn't that an oxymoron?
But okay, no, it's really not. When you consider the tradition of liberation theology that arose and was brutally suppressed, it's not. But just check out the language. The story's by Carol Glass at National Catholic Reporter, ncronline.org. Dateline Vatican City. Focusing on poverty and sacrificing for the poor are the heart of the gospel, not signs of communism, Pope Francis said at his morning mass. The story is dated today. Furthermore, if Christians don't dig deep and generously open up their wallets, they do not have genuine faith, the Pope said Tuesday during the mass in the chapel of the Domus Sancti Marthae. He said people often hear, oh, this priest speaks about poverty too much. This bishop talks about poverty. This Christian, this sister talks about poverty. Well, they're a bit communist, aren't they? I mean, he really is. He's needling them, Jim. And then he said, but poverty is precisely at the heart of the gospel. If we were to remove poverty from the gospel, people would understand nothing about Jesus' message. And this is all according to Vatican Radio. He went on to say that being fully Christian means being rich in spirit, faith, the word, wisdom, and zeal. He said, when faith doesn't reach your pockets, it is not a genuine faith.
That sounds an awful lot like that prosperity gospel crap. Or, in fact, I saw it on the Twitter.
I don't read it that way, Jim. The prosperity gospel says the prosperity gospel says that magic Jesus will make you rich if you just max out all your credit cards and give it to the mega church.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood what you were saying. Okay.
He said the theology of poverty is based on Jesus being poor. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit means letting oneself be enriched by the poverty of Christ and not wanting to be rich with those riches that are not from Christ. Which is the exact opposite of the prosperity gospel, because the prosperity gospel is sort of neo-Calvinist and says that if God likes you, he'll manifest it by making you rich.
Right, right. I, I, I didn't really hear or understand exactly what you said. My bad.
Oh, no, I mean, there's nothing to apologize for.
No, I was in my Calvinistic counseling. And then jumped in my Calvinism. That's pretty impressive.
That's gonna make Jebbia and Marco Ruby. He's a Baptist now. It'll make Sam Brownback have a brown cow. It'll make poor little Ricky Santorum's head explode.
I know one of them had a bad reaction to it. Cause it said he should. I forget what stay with what he knows or something like that or.
That was Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum.
this 19 clown car is pretty good. I mean, it is amusing, scary, but it just never in the way that guy you had talking about the petroleum guy about. Well, don't worry, everything will be fine. And it's just like, I'm thinking to myself, and people are like that. And when they hear talk like that, it puts them at ease. And that's all the chicken noodle news is. And, you get a little ray of sunshine, very little from, MSNBC. But every minute, you always have the fracking chick coming on. And that's in the background. And I think, that's why it doesn't go full. I think they have some pretty good reporters. They just can only go so far. Or they'll be looking for a job, really making seven figures probably.
Seven?
Seven figures?
I don't know. I wonder if you're not being a bit conservative in your estimate.
You can make that much? Well, see, if they would just give me a job for a year, I'd never, that's all I need is 1 year, because I think I could live off eight figures, damn, $10 million. Think they make that much?
I haven't seen the tax returns.
I'll take a buddy with all those guys. I'll let you go. Let somebody else get through. But sometimes you think, it makes you almost think, how can things get better? And I like that little thing you had yesterday about the thing that drives you up the wall when people say it?
Which one? I remember there was one last night, but.
Yeah, the one last night. That would kind of remind me of my dad, because if you would say, I would say nuclear, I always mispronounce it. So whenever, and I didn't mean to sound like we were talking nuclear, I'd say it was like nuclear energy or nuclear power. So I just kind of said atomic when I was around. It's pronounced nuclear. I'm like, sounds the same, but okay, I mean atomic. But.
Right.
All right.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good evening. I mean, I'm glad your employer was at least able to be made to see reason and understand that, you've really got a strip and everything.
Jesus. Well, that's the corporation that does the drug test. See, that's another thing that's such a scam. I think a lot of these companies, when you go for a job, they may or may not really. Well, I'm sure they kind of care a little bit, but I think the whoever does the insurance has a deal with drug testing companies. They say, look, you have to give every employee a drug test because we have this little company on the side that makes, and they probably make an obscene amount for what a drug test probably costs, obscene amount of money. And so if you want insurance or whatever, for the operation that they're doing, you have to make your employees take drug tests.
What a lovely racket, huh?
Yeah. That wouldn't happen here in America, though.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah. Of course not. Oh, and by the way, since you are back in your native Louisiana stand, Jim, I encourage you to watch the unfolding budget crisis that's busting out down there. It's almost like Louisiana's catching a disease because of something that happened in Kansas. It's almost the same problem.
And what I like is Bobby Jindal is going to run for president, but Kenny Benson just bangs.
Yeah, because you know, because Piyush has a constituency out here that's just yearning to work for him.
it could be Piyush is the president, and then what's his name, Governor Kansas.
Oh,
Kansas, the thing is, they reelected that guy. How did that happen?
Well, they reelected Piyush too. I mean, don't sound so damn surprised, Jim. Didn't Piyush get reelected?
Yeah. Stupid stick out here, though. But I guess this isn't the only place. I mean, it is.
The marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas stand is just walking around kicking furniture at this point.
I'm with her, but I'm trying not to because it hurts my foot, you know. So I'm trying to get back on that.
Well, it does.
But,
and sooner or later, it'll send you out howling into the yard, tearing at your hair and your clothing. And you don't want that.
Yeah. No. Not going totally bald, but it seems like I don't have as much hair as I
No,
had,
I've been,
I,
I've, well, I've been,
20.
I've been working on my coif for a few, for at least 10 years now. So, you know, I understand. Jim, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right.
Take it easy. Bye now. Our buddy Jim, calling from Louisiana stand. I want to share something with you. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but let me see. I think it might. Had a voicemail. It actually goes back a few days. Goes back 11 days. I'm not used to seeing voicemail on the stress line. So if you've left a voicemail in the past, my apologies. I generally don't think about it except during the hours of the program. And because we don't want the sound of the ringing and everything going on during the program, the ringer's off and all of that. But I had a lovely little... Oh, by the way, I just conjured the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand by email. She said, subject line, Brownback. Diane said, I cannot find anyone who voted for him. Oh, I think it would take a scanning electron microscope to find one now. That's, Diane, that's that bold conservatism. Well, heck yeah, I knew he was going to screw Kansas over and burn state government to the ground. And that's why I voted for him, for freedom. Wolverines! No. I didn't vote. It must have been that guy voted for him. It wasn't me. Maybe she did it. No, I didn't. Right. But I thought I would share with you this little voicemail. If I can get it, get everything to work just as I need it to. Let me see here. All right, hold on. No. Huh. There we go. All right, maybe now it'll go. Well, I guess not. It was a little experiment. Probably should have tried it off air. But Bill in New Hampshire, thank you very kindly for your very, very kind note. And I was going to share it with the Horn Family Commune congregation, but it just didn't work out that way. Just a kind note saying how much voicemail saying how much he enjoyed the program and how much respect he had for Bill, Mr. Stress. Oh, well, this happens every campaign season, by the way. Some Republican will find some song that they think is about freedom. This goes back to when Ronnie Reagan tried to appropriate Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, which is, curiously, even though the title has Born in the USA, which must be a good thing, and had Bruce's behind in a pair of tight jeans and a white T-shirt standing in front of a big old that big old American flag from the movie Patton. I mean, that just screamed patriotism, right? And so it was the Reagan people, not the Bush people. It was the Reagan people who tried to use Born in the USA, which has lyrics that are a horrifying examination of how bad stuff had gotten for, you know, the working, sweating, bleeding, dying class in America. And Bruce had to crawl the ass of the Reagan campaign and says, quit using my song. You'll notice it doesn't generally happen to Democrats. Well, the latest installment in this effort involves Neil Young. And Neil Young has finally earned my, not that he was losing sleep at night, earned my my respect again. There was that time period after September 11th when he was a big George W. Bush fan, and that was just, yuck. Couldn't square it, but people do things. So the Jebbia campaign, complete with an exclamation point, the Jebbia campaign decided to appropriate Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. Keep on rockin' in the free world. Which, again, is one of those songs that maybe isn't quite as patriotic as Jebbia thought, But see, Republicans are freaking nerds. They're not hip. They don't have any cool to them at all. Not even Rand Paul and that libertarian ophthalmologist and that thing on his head. No. Just as a matter of for purposes of examination and analysis, we'll check out a little bit of it, shall we? Oh, time out. The clueless person was not Jebbia. I got ahead of myself. I guess I was kind of wishing it was Jebbia. No, it was the walking comb over who announced his presidential campaign today. I mean, that's all there is to him. It's a comb over. Empty suit, comb over, done. And I'm not bald shaming, damn it. It was, the guy whose last name begins with T and ends in rump, which I think is appropriate. He's the one who appropriated Rockin' in the Free World. Yes, he's a big old dork. Bear in mind the imagery that goes with the video is of a homeless person. People shuffling at their feet. People sleeping in their shoes. Saying he'd be better off. the shopping cart with the homeless guy with the little American flag tucked in the corner is kind of a giveaway that this isn't some sort of right-wing fascist patriotic anthem, but, you know. Image of a guy dumpster diving for food. Wait, this is the this is the Republican wet dream. Woman in the night. Woman on a walker. With a baby. I mean, my God. One more kid who will never go to school? And the guy whose name starts with T and ends in rump? T-rump? You know, T-Rex, T-rump. Hey, we have a new name. The T-rump thinks this is like the upbeat message for his presidential sort of campaign. His presidential non-campaign, his publicity campaign. His great big long run, running reality show TV infomercial. Good God. You get the idea. Now, here's the fun part. Why did Neil Young, apart from the fact that T-Rump is an odious and despicable attempt at a member of the human race, why did Neil Young have an issue with T-Rump over the use of Keep on Rockin' in the Free World? One, I'll warrant that T-Rump didn't pay to, you know, make it a campaign advertisement. So there's that. But on the other hand, there's also the fact that, Neil Young's representative told TMZ that T-Rump never even tried to get permission to use the song. But TMZ also notes Neil, a libertarian and a Canadian citizen, does not agree with the T-Rump campaign. And, well, so, cool. Like I said, there's an upside to this. Neil Young is squarely in the corner of Senator Bernie Sanders. Good call. Nice, Neil. Nice. Particularly glad to know that as a Canadian libertarian, you're not supporting the campaign of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. And by the way, 12 minutes to go in the program, and we are still $60 away from meeting the challenge that is on the table for this evening. 12 folks at $5, 6 folks at 10. Meeting the challenges is kind of important. But since I mentioned Senator Sanders, an interesting little moment on the NPR show hosted by Diane Rehm. She got Senator Sanders on her program. And she immediately took up the question, and I'm glad she did, because I've been seeing this all over the place. I mean, this is a sort of blood libel smear. And where I saw it originate, and I think I've mentioned this already, was at Stormfront, but who would have access to that? Which Republican camp? But the smear goes like this. That Bernie Sanders has dual American and Israeli citizenship. But there, because, you know, there really are people who have dual Israeli and U.S. citizenship. But Bernie isn't one of them. And Diane Rehm asked him straight up, are you a dual Israeli American dual citizen? And he said, no, not even. But the follow-up was equally compelling. Diane Rehm, because Bernie is Jewish. And I don't say that as any sort of a revelation. His father immigrated from Poland, having experienced the nightmare horrors of the Holocaust, and having had lots of family die in it. I mean, for God's sakes, if a Mormon can run for the presidency of the United States, we ought not have any problem. Well, you know, someday we'll get an atheist president again. Notice I said again? We've had them, you know. Certainly agnostics. Definitely deists. We may never have another black president. Barack Obama may go down in history as the United States' answer to Septimus Severus. But I don't get all worked up about someone's ethnicity. I don't get worked up at all. So Diane Rehm asks Bernie, tell me your feeling about whether there should be a two-state solution should Palestine be given statehood. Sanders, absolutely. What you have in that part of the world is an unspeakable tragedy. And it seems like it's never ending, and it seems like it every year gets worse and worse, and more killing and more bombings and everything else. And again, Diane, if I had the magical solution to that problem, I would be in the president's office today giving it. I don't have it. But clearly the goals are twofold. Number one, the Palestinian people, in my view, deserve a state of their own. They deserve an economy of their own. They deserve economic support from the people of this country. And Israel needs to be able to live in security without terrorist attacks. Those are the goals of, I think, any sensible foreign policy in that region. Anybody got a problem with that? Because I don't. That's about as rational and humane an answer as one can expect from any aspirant to the White House. But it gets even more interesting. Diane Rehm then asks Bernie, how do you believe President Obama's relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu has affected our relationship with Israel? Oh, someday we may have a body politic in this country where a tiny little country like Israel is accorded the weight it deserves. You know, about the same weight that we give Costa Rica or Brunei. Instead of, well, you know. And what Bernie said about the two-state solution, I sure hope we've got $3 billion a year laying around to ship to a Palestinian state. Because if we don't, we're just big stinking hypocrites. And I'm not pointing that at Bernie. I'm saying that of our entire nation. If every working man and woman in America can work a day, 2 days, 3 days, I don't know what the calculus is, to come up with the $3 billion we send to Israel every year, we can work a couple of days for Palestine as well. But the question, how do you believe President Obama's relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu has affected our relationship with Israel? Solid question. Bernie answers. Well, I got to tell you, I'm not a great fan of President Netanyahu. I didn't attend the speech that he gave before the joint session of Congress. I think it was opportunistic. I think he was using it as part of his campaign for re-election. I think he was being used or did use the Republicans to go behind the president's back. And I think in that region, sadly, on both sides, I don't think we have the kind of leadership that we need. And so, you know, I think the president is trying to do the best that he can in enormously difficult circumstances. How refreshing, how absolutely, stunningly candid for an aspirant to the White House. Bless her heart, Senator Secretary Clinton would have still been hemming and hawing. And I'm not beating on Hillary. And had that question been asked of any of the occupants of the clown train. Nah, it's not a clown train anymore. We're going to start queuing up Ozzy Osbourne every time we talk about the Republican presidential candidates, I think, henceforward. They would have just been hollering, Bruga, Bruga, Israel, Bruga, 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 chosen people, Bruga, 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 rapture, Bruga, Bruga. I wonder how many papers in Israel will refer to Bernie Sanders as a self-hating Jew for pointing out that he doesn't think well of the fascist Bibi Netanyahu, the war criminal Bibi Netanyahu. Hard to say. Hey, thanks, labor man, our buddy Gary. Thank you for finishing off the challenge. Thank you very kindly. And Steve jumped in as well. So that means we have, for the evening, we finish off with a deficit of $140. No, $115. Thank you. Another contribution came in. So tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $315, and that beats the heck out of $450, believe you me. And that means bills. So far, we're up to being able to pay almost one of them. And we can spend Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday working on the rest of that one and the other as well. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to everyone who makes this this program go. From those who listen and never say a word, to those who leave kind and touching email or voicemails, to those who send emails, however you participate, thank you. Thank you for those of you who keep the program literally on the air with your kind contributions. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.